man says it's the end of time, and the Mississippi River, she's a going dry. The interest is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see, a woman and the kids and the dogs and me. I got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch catfish from dusk till dawn. Make our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Ain't too many things these old boys can't do. We grow good old tomatoes and homemade wine, and country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Because you can't starve a bout and you can't make a run. Those woodland mole boys raised on shotguns. We say grace, we say ma'am. If you ain't into that, we don't give a damn. We came from the West Virginia coal mines and the Rocky Mountains and the western skies. And we can skin a buck, we can run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I had a good friend in New York City. He never called me by my name, just Hillbilly. My grandpa taught me how to live off the land, and he taught him to be a businessman. He used to send me pictures of the Broadway nights, and I'd send him some homemade wine. But he was killed by a man with a switchblade knife. For $43, my friend lost his life. I'd love to spit some beach nuts in that dude's eyes and shoot him with my old 45, cause a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. California and South Alabama and little towns all around this land. We can skin a buck and run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
Welcome, everybody, to Get Ready, It's Coming. This broadcast is brought to you by LibertyTreeRadio.4mg.com, PBN.4mg.com, Live365.com. When you get to their page, type Liberty Tree Radio into their search bar. A listener button will appear, push it, and you're here. We are also heard on IndianaFreedomTalkRadio.com. the Hallmark Network, and various AM and FM microbroadcasts and CB-based stations across this republic.
A good evening to those listening on PBFTT, Patriot Broadcast from the Trenches, 89.5 Micro FM, Chiloquin, the state of Jefferson. A special salute to our brothers and sisters on From the Trenches, worldreport.com, and a one-finger salute to the NSA folks that are listening. We open this broadcast with Country Boy Can Survive by Hank Williams Jr. It is the 27th of March in the year of our Lord, 2014, 8 p.m. Central, 9 p.m. Eastern, and 6 p.m. Pacific. We are your hosts, Steve and Missy, coming to you from Deep South, Louisiana. This is a live call-in program. The topic tonight for the first half of the show is weapons. The second half of the show will be about food storage for beginners with little money. If you would like to discuss weapons during the first half of the show, the number to call is 712-432-0900. That's 712-432-0900. A nice lady will come on the line and ask you for the conference room that you want. That would be 957-464 and hit the pound sign. That's 957-464 and hit the pound sign. Don't forget to hit star 6 to go live and talk to us, and star 6 to mute yourself again. If you would like to contact us with a question, show ID, or anything else, email us at bulldog22tc@yahoo.ca. That's bulldog, B-U-L-L-D-O-G, 22tc at yahoo.ca. We had it wrong. We thought it was .com, but when we set this up for the show, it's .ca. I want you to understand something. You're an American. You are left with no other choice. You're either a prisoner of war or a resistance fighter. Choose wisely. Your very soul depends on it. There's no longer any middle ground. And Steve will be going over weapons, and I'll give him the floor.
All right, y'all. Welcome to the Arms Room. Tonight, I want to go over my picks for weapons that I think you're going to need when it happens. At a minimum, this is what I believe should be in your arms room. I do not slack in this area. You can have all the food, medical, and survival gear in the world, but you need to be able to defend it, and then you need to be able to take the fight to the enemy. And for all you government guys listening tonight trying to figure out what weapons I own, Molan Labe, God gave me the right to own them, not you, and you can't have them. Now, before we get into our topic, I want to go over part of an article that I found on FromTheTrenchesWorldReport.com today. It was written by William Norman Grigg at Lew Rockwell. It's about an Idaho family that was raided at midnight in a military-style raid. Henry Shively discussed this today on his broadcast, but I want to cover it a little bit more. For those of you that didn't catch his broadcast, I'm going to read a little bit of this article. It's titled, Idaho Family Terrorized by Midnight Paramilitary Raid. And like I said, it's lewrockwell.com by William Norman Grigg. David and Connie Johnson were asleep when they heard a noise. Connie later described it as the walls caving in. Seconds later, their front door was forced open, and two armored strangers burst into their two-room apartment the middle-aged couple was sharing with their adult son, Aaron. Several other assailants were clustered behind the two that had forced open the door. One of them was a female holding a leash that barely restrained a large, snarling dog. One of the intruders pointed an assault rifle at David's head and threatened to shoot him. Another invader, a female, bellowed, "Put your hands up. This dog will bite you." David was seized and shackled. Connie and Aaron were also dragged from their home. Neighbors were drawn by the commotion. They poked their heads out and were ordered to go back in their rooms. At no point in this encounter did the intruders identify themselves as police officers. 2 minutes later, the SWAT team that had terrorized the Johnsons arrested the Johnsons' neighbor, Bill Gerst, who had been accused by a woman of threatening her. Gerst was forced to low crawl on his belly towards the officers so he could be handcuffed. "What's going on?" he repeatedly asked, explaining that there was nobody else in the apartment. Gerst persisted in trying to find out why the cops had laid siege to his home. "You shut your mouth," one of the raiders snapped. According to a lawsuit that the Johnson's family has filed, the information used to justify this no-warrant raid on Mr. Gerst's apartment was shaky and legally suspect. Listen to this. Specifically, it was a hearsay allegation made by someone who knew a woman named Hilda Val, who is described in the suit as a petty criminal who had reported to police that she argued with Mr. Gerst and he had threatened her with violence. At the request of the neighboring Nampa Police Department, which received the tip, a tactical team from the Caldwell Police Department conducted what they call a welfare check. That was actually a guns-drawn, no-knock, SWAT-style raid. The Caldwell PD claimed knowledge of the presence of guns at the premises, which, according to the standard threat matrix...
Ooh, wait. You have guns, yeah, you bad human.
You shouldn't have those. Supposedly, it justifies a paramilitary assault. Although the officers claimed they were dealing with a homicide in progress, police audio of the incident documents that the officers didn't know the specific apartment number. Y'all get this. Which means that the door kick on the Johnson's home, which they could have easily resulted in Mr. Johnson's homicide, was a product of a whimsical guess. That's just crazy.
No,
that's police
insane.
Officer who kicks in an innocent person's door unannounced is a home invader.
Thank you.
This victim has the moral and legal right to use lethal force to protect his home against such criminal aggression, something explicitly recognized in an enlightened measure recently enacted by the state of Indiana. Okay. This type of action is military tactics. They come in and they overwhelm everyone, and they dominate an entire apartment complex, and they threaten everybody. They point automatic weapons at an innocent American national and scare the crap out of him. When did this become normal protocol for the cops? The police department has already acquired MRAP vehicles, which is a military vehicle with a freaking gun port on it. It's got a machine gun turret mounted on the top of it. When did the cops start thinking that they were soldiers? The cops and the government have declared war on us. When someone declares war on you, you better get ready to fight them. If not, they're going to kill you or they're going to enslave you. They have the best weapons that money can buy. We bought them for them. We need to be able to defend ourselves against them. You cannot win a war with a stick. You better get armed. And I don't mean having one pistol. When they decide to conduct an invasion on your home, they're going to come with an MRAP, automatic weapons, shotguns, dogs, and they will not hesitate to kill you, your family, and your dog, even if it is the wrong house. Then they get a week's paid vacation and go right back to the job of killing Americans.
First.
Well, that's enough about that. Let's talk about weapons. As we discussed in our first broadcast, I believe that at a minimum, you better have a sidearm and a battle rifle. After you acquire those two, it's time to really start getting armed. Now, money is always an issue. Unless you're part of that group of that currently occupies D.C., then you can just buy whatever you want. I know that there are higher quality weapons on the market than what I'm going to recommend, but I don't know too many people that can afford to fill up their arms room with the most expensive weapons. So I spare some expense where I can so I can be able to acquire other weapons. I would much rather have 10 medium quality weapons and 2 high quality ones than one $3,000 rifle and just 2 boxes of ammo. I can get the same results for $500 or less. Then I can spend the rest of the money on ammo and some cheap AJ camouflage. There are numerous weapons on the market in all price ranges. The calibers that I chose are for a specific reason. I find that ammo is usually easier to purchase in these, and most of my choices are NATO. Therefore, you will be able to acquire a lot more in a collapse. I don't care for the boutique calibers because you're not going to be able to find them. Now, if I were building an arms room for coming trouble, it would contain the following weapons. At a minimum, you need a long-range rifle, something in a large caliber that can reach out and touch its targets, something that can easily hit 500-plus meters. You need a battle rifle, preferably something that can take a high-capacity magazine and carry a little bit of accessories. This needs to be able to serve as both close-quarters combat and out to 500. You need a tactical shotgun. Obviously, 12-gauge would be the best. I also recommend you get a long-barrel shotgun at either 12 or 20-gauge, or get both. Definitely a .22 rifle. Small game is going to be easy to shoot with something like that. And plus, when you can find the ammo, it's affordable. I like the Henry AR-7. It's made by Henry Repeating Arms. This weapon can be totally disassembled, and the entire thing fits in the buttstock, and it's waterproof. Stick it in your bug-out bag. And sidearms, several of them, but at a minimum, a revolver and a semi-automatic. We'll get into those in a little while. And don't forget, think about a crossbow or a compound bow. We'll get into that in a minute also. All right, I want to start with the long-range rifle. Different calibers are way more popular in some areas than others. That may help you choose which one you want. In some parts of America, they love a .30-06. Some parts, it's a 7mm. Ammo will be more available in that caliber that everybody else likes in that area. It's going to be stocked in the stores, and you might be able to barter with it later. Find somebody that's got the ammo that you shoot, and you might be able to trade something. Everyone, including me, wants a 50 cal, but an M82A1 is going to run you $8,000, brand new, And the cheapest I could find for a 50 cal round is $4. Okay, you're looking at probably more like $6 if you can even find them. Plus, they weigh about 30 pounds without ammo and without optics. So if you're not independently wealthy and have arms like Arnold Schwarzenegger, you might want to drop it down a little bit. I like the 308. It's also known as a 7.62 by 51 millimeter. As always, my main reason is that it's a round our military uses a lot. In a crap hit the fan scenario, you should be able to get a lot of it. Think about this. I was a tank commander. My tank had several thousand of these rounds on it when I was in Iraq. So think about all the ammo that's going to be out there if you choose 308. Plus, it is a very mean round. And there are numerous options when it comes to feeding this rifle. My choice for an entry-level long gun is the Mossberg 100 ATR in 308. It comes with a 22-inch barrel, a 1 in 10 twist, and we'll get into the twist in a little bit once we get going. It only weighs 6.7 pounds without optics. It's got a synthetic stock, and it's only 42 inches long total. It also has an adjustable weight trigger. This thing, it almost feels like a two-stage trigger when you're firing it. This is a no-frills rifle, though. It doesn't need to be. You put some good optics on it, and you can put down just about anything you're hunting. I only paid $350 for this, and it came with a cheap Chinese scope on it, which I plan to replace soon. The MSRP is $425. I chose it because it's a very quality weapon, and it doesn't break the bank. I was able to acquire this weapon and have enough cash left over to get set up with dies so I could reload it. There are a lot more high-quality 308s out there, but paper currency was my deciding factor. I have no issues with this rifle at all, though. All my weapons are tested, and I have no problems with this at all. The only thing that they could improve on it is they don't have a bipod lug. They have a molded sling attachment on it, and there's not a lot of bipods you can mount, but the Harris bipod will mount on this with the sling attachment. A comparable 308 to this would be the Remington 700 SPS Tactical. It comes with a 20-inch barrel, a 4+1 magazine. It's 39 and 5/8 inches overall, and it weighs 7.7 pounds. But it's going to cost you $650 to $700, then you got to put optics on it. That's damn near double the price. And Mossberg didn't sell out to the state of New York like Remington did. They chose Mammon over our second article. If you don't want a 308, take a look at a 7mm or a 30-06. You do need a large caliber to reach out and touch your targets. And for this, I would recommend at a minimum 1,000 rounds for this weapon. Find out what kind of ammo your weapon likes and just keep on buying it. All right, next I want to get into battle rifles. There are a ton of choices when it comes to these weapons. I want to talk about what I think are the top three. Try not to become a mall ninja with your battle rifle. There are so many accessories that could be mounted on your rifle that you could end up with a 30-pound rifle if you buy everything. Try to envision what you'll be doing with it when looking for additions. If you can afford it, get two of them. Set one up with a holographic sight and the other with a short-range scope. That way you're ready for either close quarters or longer-range shots. If you can't get two, when you zero your battle rifle, try to zero it in the middle ground of where you're going to be shooting. That way you're not going to be too far off. If you zero it at 50 meters and you start shooting out at 400, you're going to be a little bit off. A lot more adjustment. The first one I want to discuss is the AR-10. I really want one of these, but Missy has decided that we need to eat and pay our bills instead of spending this much on a rifle, so I'll have to wait. Mostly because I already have a 308, though, this is why I'd want it, and I can reload them. This would be a great weapon because I can use the same round as I do on my long-range rifle. You can still get an AR-15 for under $1,000, an AK for under $700, but an AR-10 is well above that. Armalite sells theirs for $1,500, and that's before you get accessories and optics. My preference would be an AR-10 for the obvious stopping power reasons, but the price tag is going to keep me away from it. And you got to think about weight. AR-10 with rails and some well-placed accessories is going to double the weight of an AR-15. And if you're buying ammo, a box of 308 is going to cost about twice as much as 223. And, I mean, as far as for your sniper rifle, that's okay. You're not going to shoot as much, but when you're shooting a battle rifle, you can eat up some ammo pretty quick. Now, my pick, AR-15. 5.56-223. They're going to run you between $700 and $1,200. This is my main choice for a battle rifle for numerous reasons. Now, there's been a lot of stuff written about the 5.56 not being very powerful. It doesn't have the stopping power, the big calibers, and all that. This is going to depend on the round you use and also the velocity of the round when it impacts your target. When you start getting under 2,500 feet per second on impact, the tumble isn't created, and it'll basically just go right through your target. So if you got a round, a heavy-duty round, like a 62 or 77 grain, and you're hitting at 2,500 feet per second or more, when the round impacts, it's going to tumble and it's going to shred. So it's not a weak round, as long as you get good ammo. Definitely, I want to talk about this. When you buy your 5.56 chambered AR-15, get it with a 1-in-9 twist. We'll get into that a little bit later, and a collapsible stock. Some folks may want a 20-inch barrel, but in my opinion, you already have your long-range, large-caliber rifle, so you don't need a battle rifle that's long and cumbersome also. If you can't get both, if you can't get a long-range rifle and an AR-15, if you do go with the M16 style, get a 20-inch for that because it's kind of a middle ground. But definitely always get an upper that is chambered for 5.56. If it's chambered for 5.56, you can also safely shoot 223. There is a slight difference in the two. The 5.56 and 223 are almost identical. You cannot tell by looking at it, but if you shoot a 5.56 and only a 223 chambered rifle, it's going to create a lot more pressure, and it will damage the weapon, and it could kill you. But a 223 is just fine in a 5.56 chambered rifle. All of the AR-15s you purchase need to be 5.56 chambered. What are you going to do if you're in this, you know, this scenario down the road and you pick up some ammo somewhere and you don't know if it's 5.56, 223, and you stick it in there, you create a lot of pressure. A 223 round creates about 55,000 PSI, and a 5.56 goes up to 60,000. The throat or the lead, which is the portion of the barrel directly in front of the chamber, is longer when it's chambered for 5.56, so it can handle the pressure. You're creating way too much pressure if you shoot it in a 223 weapon. All right, I want to get into the twist a little bit. This is pretty important when you're choosing your weapon. I like the 1-in-9 twist on my barrel. If you don't know what a twist is, basically it's the rate of rotation that the bullet has as it flies. It's the distance that the round travels before it rotates 360 degrees. So a 1-in-9 twist is basically one rotation in 9 inches. This matters depending on what ammo you fire. Faster twist rates, which would be like a 1-in-9 or a 1-in-7, will stabilize heavier bullets, but they'll destabilize a 55 grain or lower. We're talking AR ammo. And the exact opposite is true. If you're trying to shoot a 77 grain and you got a 1-in-12 twist, it's going to destabilize that bullet when it's in flight. The 1-in-9 is a great compromise. It's not too fast to cause problems with the 55, but it's fast enough to stabilize up to 75s and 77s. And you can get a barrel with a 1-in-7, but it's not going to stabilize a 55-grain bullet. The 1-in-9 or the 1-in-10 is the best overall twist that can stabilize. It's kind of a good middle ground. And if you don't know what the twist your barrel has, if you've already got your AR, it should be stamped at the base of your barrel. If you can't find it, try this. Take your bore brush, stick it on the end of your cleaning rod, and then stick the bore brush in the end of the barrel. Place a mark on the rod somewhere beyond 12 inches from the barrel. Then slowly start pushing it through the barrel. When that mark is rotated 360 degrees as you're going through the barrel, that is your twist. You can measure the distance that the mark has traveled. Now, when choosing your upper, look into what ammo you'll be firing most. Right now, you're probably going to be able to get 55 grain or 62 grain. There is 77 out there, but I've only found it in a reloading. I haven't found it in an actual loaded round locally where I am. If you're going to, like I said before, if you're going to shoot the 62 or 77, look at the 1-in-7 or the 1-in-9 twist. All right, when it comes to a bolt for your AR, if you're building this, I prefer chrome. I have one of each. The chrome bolt is better because it doesn't have as much friction. The parkerized parts, it can wear out your inside a lot, your upper a lot more. The chrome tends to slide better, and it cleans a lot easier also. Now I'm going to get into a lot of people's favorite AKs, 7.62 by 39. A lot cheaper. It's going to run you between $500 to $700. You can probably get them used a little bit cheaper than that. They have a 16 and a quarter inch barrel, and they come with a 1 in 9.5 twist. You can get it with a foldable stock. With the foldable stock, they're 24 inches long, and with it extended, they're about 34 inches, and they weigh 7.5. So it's pretty close to the AR, except for it's just a bigger round. This is a proven weapon. It's been around since the 40s. There's been over 75 million of these things built. And a lot of them are probably still in operation, the originals. I would have no problem owning one of these as my battle rifle. If money wasn't an issue, I would own an AR-10 over an AK, though, because, like I said before, the AR-10 has a 308 round, and I can use the same ammo as I use in my sniper weapon. So the AK, you're definitely going to have to buy different ammo. These, at least 2,000 rounds. Double it if you can, and then start reloading. All right, before we get into handguns and all that, I want to talk about ammo a little bit. First, I need a sip of my beverage.
Quick question.
Water. Yes, somebody wants to come up.
Hey, this, hey guys, you sound great, Steve. This is Joe from the Carolinas. I had a quick question for you, one topic.
Yes, sir.
Lever action rifles. Is there any place for them if we find them? And if we are absolutely twisting your arm, would there be a particular caliber that we'd best to get for a lever action?
I don't own one. I want one. I've been speaking back and forth with somebody on From the Trenches World Report, and he swears by them. I want to get a 30-30 and something like that. Something like that, you're going to have less moving parts. It's obviously going to be a better weapon, and they won the West. You know, so I would like to have a 30-30 myself. Henry makes one, Henry Repeating Arms, but they're a little pricey. I definitely want to look into one soon, but I've had to. The time of the year for me right now is pay the government my government fees, so I've had to stop purchasing. But are you looking into one or?
I am, you know, and I was sort of split between a 30-30 and a 30-06, and nobody's got 30-06, and they're trying to sell me on the 45 ACPs, and I'm like, I'm thinking more 30-30. Yeah. Well, I don't want to take up too much of your time, but I just wanted to give a call in and let you all know we're listening. You sound great, and keep up the great work. Thank you.
Hey, definitely. Thanks for calling in, Joe. And, yeah, I definitely want to look into a 30-30. There's a lot of weapons that I want, and that one's definitely on my list. I just haven't got to it yet. I'm hoping Missy will remember that. All right, let's talk about ammo a little bit. When y'all are choosing your round for your rifles, there's a lot more than just availability. There's a lot of factors. Heavier bullets are not always better. I've got some 225 grain 308s that I've loaded up. I want to try them out, but I'm thinking the 168s might be better. As we talked about before, the twist rate and your bullet weight do matter. A slow twist won't stabilize a heavy bullet, while a fast one will destabilize a light one. This is what I reload. This is my preference. Hornady bullets. I like Hornady VMAX when I load for my AR. They have awesome expansion. Y'all look up some YouTube videos on the expansion on these things. They're unbelievable. They spread, tumble, and they shred when they impact their target, which means a lot longer range shot is still going to have a devastating effect on your target. And this round goes in a caliber all the way from the little 17s all the way up to 308. When I load my VMAX, I load them up for 2,900 feet per second. That way, the further it gets out there, I'm still going to be over that 2,500 Goldilocks zone for impact on an AR round. Now, if you haven't thought about reloading, think about it. I've been reloading for about 2 years now. It was a little pricey to get into it, more pricey than I thought, I should say. But I found out it's not as hard as people think it is. But reloading gear is getting harder to find. We have one place in town here that sells reloading equipment, and they've been running a lot low. I had ordered some dies last year, and one of my 9mm die, it actually took 8 months to get it in. And powder is getting really, really hard to find. So even if you're not reloading, start buying this stuff or bartering later on down the road.
And if you're like us, you hoard everything you buy, so we hoard powder.
Yeah, that and a PVC pipe might get me swatted. I keep them separate to all the NSA guys out there. Most of the powder that I find, though, it's not even in my reloading books. I mean, I'm buying it, and I'm going to try to find data for it, but the stuff I'm finding now, I've never even heard a half of it. But if you are reloading, here's a good one to look at. A 75-grain boat tail hollow point. I use BLC2 at 24.4 gram charge. I know I'm talking fast here. If some of y'all that reload, if you want to listen to the archives, you go to Spike's website, IndianaFreedomTalkRadio.com, and you can check it out tomorrow. But this one, I put 24.4 grams of charge, and you can safely load it up to 2,700 feet per second. This is not a long-distance round, but a 75-grain boat tail hollow point under 300 meters is going to be devastating. Another one that I like is a 180-grain 308 round nose. They call that a moose round, so think about that. All right, enough about ammo. Let's get into sidearms. I heard a ding. Does somebody want to come up? Nope. Okay, dead air. Sidearms. Some people like the revolver and some like the semi-automatic. I like them both. My personal sidearm is a 45.
Sorry about that.
Go ahead.
Yeah, hey, good to hear you guys up and broadcasting well, and Bulldog and Missy, y'all sound great. This is Paraclete.
Hey, how you doing, Pastor?
Praising the Lord, brother. Had a wonderful broadcast, and I just wanted to say thank you so much for y'all's support and being there. It means a lot. And I just had one question.
Yes, sir.
What do you think of the 270?
I like the 270. I don't own one. The 270, to me, a lot of people swear by it. The 270 is kind of that in-between. I know it's got a lot of range on it, but it's closer to a 5.56, 223, and it's kind of that middle ground again. If you can only have one, a 270 would be great. But a lot of hunters down here in South Louisiana, that's their go-to rifle.
That's exactly pretty much what I was thinking as well. It seems to me to be like a 223 Super Mag, but not quite a 308.
Right, it's kind of in between. And if you can't have both, that's a good middle rifle right there. I should have brought that one up.
Well, it was just something I wanted to see what you thought about. I've used one for deer hunting, but never really had the opportunity to really get it out there to see what it would do. Most of my deer that I dropped with it were like 50 yards or whatnot and so forth.
Right.
I reload,
so I try to get everything on a smaller scale as far as calibers, so I don't have to reload 10 different calibers.
Oh, yeah. Well, what I did, I agree with you on that. What I did is when I started picking calibers for my collection, so to speak, I said, well, if I'm going to have one particular caliber, I'm going to have two different firearms that will shoot that same caliber, so I'm not buying multitudes of calibers as well. So, but anyway, we all have our own little plan.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. All right, well, I'll get out of the way, and y'all sound great. Just like Joe said, y'all are booming. So,
all right, thanks a lot.
Great show, thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, now back to my favorite sidearm, the 45. And I do agree with that. The 270 is a good rifle, but I can't afford all of them yet, so I'm still working on it. my personal sidearm is a Baby Eagle 45. Desert Eagle IWI makes a really good weapon there. It's similar to the 1911, but the price is almost half. 45 is a mean round to send at your enemy. And I can also send 10 of them before I have to change mags. And if you can't stop somebody with 45 or with 10 45 rounds, run. Next, the 9mm and the 40. I don't own a 40. I didn't get into the big Glock kick when everybody started buying them. I'd like to own a 40, but like I said, with reloading, I try to keep all my calibers consistent. I like the 9mm the best. I carried a 9mm Beretta in my last half of the time I was in the Army. I carried a 1911 in the first part. Neither one ever failed me, but that Beretta is a good weapon. It's a great sidearm. NATO also uses this ammo, so it's going to be easy to acquire. 40 is gaining a lot of popularity, though, because the government agencies are buying a lot of it, so there might be some of that laying around, too. I think, in my opinion, the 40 would be like the 270. It's basically in between a 9. It's not going to kick as much as a 45, but it's got a little more stopping power than a 9. Smith & Wesson M&P 9s and the 40s are running about $550 right now. But it's a pretty fair price. The 45 is about $50 more. One thing I like about the M&Ps, the Smith & Wesson makes the grips. When you purchase their handguns, they come with three different grips that you can mount on it for. If your wife has a smaller hand, it's got a smaller grip on the back, so she can actually get her hand around an actual 45 caliber pistol and shoot it. And they also come with the larger ones if you've got big basketball hands. When it comes to 9mm, though, think about HP ammo. Hollow point is the best for a 9 because it will not penetrate a windshield. I mean, maybe a side window it will, but 9mm ball does not like windshields. When it comes to these sidearms, I recommend a minimum of 500 to 1,000 rounds each. I know this is getting expensive talking about all this, but, I mean, you can burn through 500 rounds pretty quick. Now, revolvers. Hammerless revolvers, what I bought Missy was a 38 hammerless. They're great for concealment, but they do have one fault.
I hate it because it's so hard to pull through, and I'm a lady, so I used to have a 38 that had a hammer, and it was so smooth. Once that hammer's back, just to keep shooting, but that hammerless one, I do not like it.
Basically, it's a one, you just got to pull through the trigger each time because there's no hammer, but it's really good for concealment. You don't have to worry about accidentally cocking it when you put it in your purse or something
or
like
your
that. So,
pocket, yeah.
I'm trying to get her to switch to that 9mm semi, but she just doesn't like the semis yet, but she's getting there. Also, when you're shooting these things without the hammer on it, if you have to pull through that trigger every time and you have a little short barrel, you're going to pull that weapon a little bit, and it doesn't take much on these little revolvers to get you off target. Now, my new favorite, because Missy wants one now, the Judge. I don't know if y'all have one of these or if you've ever fired one, but look into them. It's a 410 shotgun shell slash 45. They call it a long Colt, but it's a 45 Colt revolver. These are awesome for self-defense. You can load all 410 rounds, or you can load 45 rounds. And these aren't the little ACPs. These are the longer ones. Or you could do every other one. Taurus makes one of these. Brand new for about $650. When I started talking to Missy about this, her eyes lit up. She wants one now. So hopefully we can get one of those in the near future. Now I want to talk about compound bows and crossbows real quick. A lot of people don't think about these. Think about it this way. These things are silent to their prey, and there is no paper trail, at least where I live, when you purchase one. Compound bows are best, I believe, because you can shoot a lot more arrows really quick than a crossbow. Crossbow, you got to stop and pull it back every time.
Hey, I have a crossbow. Watch your speech.
Well, you're good with it, though. but a crossbow does shoot a little bit further, and it hits with more force. A crossbow is going to average between 300 and 375 feet per second, while a compound is about 275 to 300. But the crossbow is going to maintain its kinetic energy a lot longer. And believe me, when we shoot these things, the crossbow, you almost can't get the bolts out of it after you've shot. These things, they go pretty deep in their targets.
No, I still have bolts sticking out of the target.
We have one that's buried
in
there that's ruined. I can't get it out. But Missy's a good shot with that thing, too. We got her scope sighted in real good, and she's tearing it up. Now, think about this for compound bows and crossbows, though, on tactics. So you had a couple guys going out on ambush, and they had crossbows or compound bows as well as their battle rifles. An enemy squad flanks themselves to the ambush. Each man sends one arrow, one into the lead element and one into the radio guy. Nobody hears anything. They fall. Therefore, they can't contact anybody. The radio guy's on the ground. They're trying to figure out what's going on. The two guys on ambush follow up with their battle rifles, and they take out an entire communist squad. Then you get out of the AO. Two guys could devastate a communist enemy squad coming through their area in about a minute like that. And your first two shots are quiet. There's no flash, nothing. So don't forget about these things whenever you are planning for these types of weapons. Also, I got lucky one day. I was driving home from work on the interstate, and it was a little archery shop in Opelousas, Louisiana, and they were going out of business. I stopped to check them out, and everything in the store was over half off. So it was a really good day for archery for us. All right, real quick, I want to go through shotguns because Missy's got some stuff she wants to talk about. There's a lot of options when it comes to tactical shotguns. As usual, I like the Mossbergs. They're very reliable and affordable. A good home defense 12-gauge is a Mossberg Pump 500A. I don't know what your states say, but down here in Louisiana, I can fit mine with a pistol grip, and it comes with one. It also comes with a shorter barrel.
Is that the one that I shot that flew out of my hand?
I made a mistake and let Missy shoot a shotgun the first time that had just a pistol grip on it, and she still hates me. But you can get one of these for less than $500. And it's a great weapon. I still own and have a 20-gauge bolt-action Mossberg that was built in the 40s. And this thing's like brand new because I keep it clean. I want this one, but I really can't afford it. I'm sure y'all have looked at it. The Kel-Tec KSG 12-gauge. This thing has twin 7-round magazines on it. And you can load up slugs in one side, buck in the other, whatever you want. It's got a little switch. As you're shooting this thing, as you're firing it, you flip the switch, it jumps to the other magazine. So if you want to switch to a slug instead of buck, it's real easy. But with no accessories at all, no optics or anything, you're looking at $900 if you can even get one. I hope I get to own one day. When it comes to shotguns, a minimum of 1,000 shells for each shotgun. Get them in birdshot, get them in buckshot, get them in slugs. And definitely when you're stockpiling your shotgun shells, get whatever you hunt with in your area. Stockpile a lot of that stuff. But if nobody has any questions on weapons, I'm going to hand it over to Missy. Going once, going twice.
Sold.
Thank y'all for paying attention to me.
All right. Well, first, I want to get to my Bible verse because I didn't get to it last week, and I love my Bible. So anyway, my Bible verse for the week is Proverbs chapter 6, verse 6 through 9. Go to the ant, thou sluggard, consider her ways and be wise, which having no guide, overseer, or ruler, provideth her meat in the summer and gathereth her food in the harvest. How long without sleep, O sluggard? When wilt thou arise out of thy sleep? Anyway, God's saying how wise the ant is because she goes and gets her own food and she has no ruler. All right. I want to give you a couple of tips that were given to me by one of our friends on FromTheTrenchesWorldReport.com. These tips are for scenario for after SHTF. I say this because all hunting laws are different, so check your local laws. If you want to catch a squirrel, you get a rat trap, the number 10 ones, the big ones. They're cheap at any hardware store. You tie it by bungee or just tie it to a tree limb, add cheese and peanut butter, voila, a squirrel trap. If you want to catch a turkey, use the springs from an old mattress. Put cracked corn in the springs. When the turkey comes to feed, he will have to put his neck down in the springs. Pull it and snap. It will snap his neck. You have turkey for dinner. Again, check your local hunting laws. Thanks, Digger, for those tips. I want to talk about food storage. There's a great article in Countryside and Small Stock Journal magazine, volume 97, number 3, the May-June 2013 issue. Before I get into the article, I want to say a few things. I don't like supermarkets. I wish we could all be self-sustainable and grow our own non-GMO food, barter between friends, and get out the corporate dole altogether. But reality is, all of us still shop at grocery stores. I do less than I used to. I'm working on being a lot more self-sustainable, but I'm not just there yet. And food prices are rising. They are. With the drought in California, and not just California, Brazil, Australia, all over the world, the floods they had in Europe. I mean, it's just because they're controlling our weather, and it's crazy. But this article I want to go over, it's not about long-term food storage, like the number 10 cans and the freeze-dried foods and all that, like you can get from My Patriot Supply, Honeyville Grain, Wise Foods, Mountain House, etc. This is about stocking your pantry from items from your local grocery store. I would suggest to watch your sales flyers from your store. Buy items when they are on sale. A few months ago, our local grocery store put Chunky Soup and Progresso Soup on sale. Normally, they're about $2.49 a can. I got 10 Progresso Soups for 99 cents each. There was a 10-item limit. And the Chunky was on sale for $1.25 each, no limit. I walked out of the grocery store. My cart was full of soup. We still have a lot of soup. We do eat it for lunches and stuff. But next time it goes on sale, I'm going to do it again. I'll never run out of soup. I'll buy more next time. So when, like, canned goods, when they go on super sale, I buy them even if I don't need them. You're eventually going to use them. Last year, Steve was out of work, so I would go through the sales flyer and only buy what was on sale. Since I'd already had a stocked pantry, I was just adding to it. I cut my grocery bill in half, and we did a lot more cooking versus ordering from local restaurants. The grocery stores do what is called loss leaders. They will lose money on certain items to get you into the store because they think once you're in there, you'll purchase normal price items. Don't play their game. Buy only the sales items. We have a really expensive grocery store here, and they do, but their sales are really good. I always see people in there with their ads, and their carts only have the sales items. Smart people. Just adjust your weekly menu to what's on sale. All right, now for this great article. It is called Food Storage for the Beginners with Little Money by Pam, editor-at-large of Countryside and Small Stock Journal magazine. There are multiple ways to build food storage. There is the long-term, store it in the closet for years for the what-if scenario. There are emergency meals that store long-term to which you just add water but are expensive per calorie. Then there is a pantry-building way, which is simply buying two or three of everything you get when you go to the supermarket. If you normally buy a package of spaghetti noodles and a jar of ragu, buy several of each and keep them in the cupboard. By buying five of everything you normally buy, excluding perishables like lettuce, you have a month's worth of food in a week. Every time you buy something you already have, put the new stuff in the back and use the older stuff first. Keep adding a little all the time, like a piggy bank. Things like canned soup, vegetables and fruit, ketchup, mustard and barbecue sauce, pickles, olives, and sauerkraut last a lot longer than the Best Buy date, and it's easy to catch sales, like I was saying earlier. Cream of chicken or mushroom soup makes a nice sauce for white beans and rice. Barbecue sauce adds zest to red beans. A jar of salsa adds zinc to pinto beans and rice, together or separate. Get a couple of dozen packets of dry gravy, sloppy joe, spaghetti, and taco mixes, because the dry ones are really cheap. Tomato soup can be used with dry spaghetti, sloppy joe, or taco mix as a substitute for tomato sauce. Bacon bits, granulated garlic, and dry minced onions make nice additions to a variety of dishes. So stock up. Peanut butter is a great source of protein and keeps quite a while. Canned stew and chili should have a place on the shelf. I personally find Spam disgusting, but it lasts decades because of the nitrates, which are horrible for you.
Hey, but if you're hungry, you throw some of that in your frying pan.
I know. But I'm sorry, that's the most I don't know how they call that food. That's so gross.
You said it to me when I was in Iraq,
I know,
though, didn't
I'm
you?
Sorry, I did. I was secretly trying to kill you, I think. I don't know. I don't even eat lunch meat anymore because of nitrates. So anyway, there's canned chicken and, of course, tuna, but with Fukushima. I don't know if I'd eat tuna. I quit eating tuna 2 years ago. And salmon. Jerky lasts longer in the freezer than on the shelf, but heads up, rehydrated tastes nasty. That's the lady's words. I don't think so.
I don't either. Yeah. We made some the other day with salt. We made a hamburger jerky with some grass-fed beef with we used salsa and taco mix as our base for our marinade. And this stuff would be good in a chili or anything.
I think I agree. So I don't agree with her on that one. Anyway, she wrote it, not me. Some other cheap and easy items are oatmeal, cream of wheat, rice, dry beans, barley or split peas for soup in 1 or 2 pound bags, mac and cheese, ramen noodles, rice-a-roni, instant potatoes, pasta noodles, Bisquick, and stovetop stuffing. Other than the stuffing, these things last well beyond the Best Buy date. If space is an issue, keep them in a plastic tote. And remember, I mean, these things are not very nutritious, but like Steve said, after the shit's a fan, if you're starving, you won't care. A box of instant milk stores well for several years in a recyclable plastic bottle once opened. Saltines last longer than bread, but not much past the Best Buy date. I have to say something about saltines. My daughter loves the chili from Wendy's, so we'll go get it and always ask for extra crackers. I have a bowl in my pantry full of saltine crackers. I have not bought breadcrumbs in 2 years. I just crush them because they're in the individual little plastic bags. I just crush them up in there and put them when I need breadcrumbs. I haven't bought saltines in forever. So, anyway, just what I do. Tortillas can substitute for bread and take little space in the freezer. Save the freezer for things that can't be kept for an extended period of any other way. Grated cheese in a resealable bag lasts months in the freezer. Buy meat in a family size or party pack and freeze it in smaller bags. Always keep the freezer full. Any space should be filled with a bottle of water. It doesn't have to work as hard when it's full, so it costs less to run. And if the power goes out, it will stay cold longer because you have frozen jugs of water in there. Have you ever tried sprouting? It's a great way to put fresh greens in your diet without going to the grocery store or having a garden. MyPatriotSupply.com. They have a sprouter for $15. It's the cheapest one I could find on the internet. I bought it. We always are sprouting over here, and we usually eat it before it's finished. It's a little four-tier. It's round. It doesn't take up a lot of space on your countertop. And they even sell the seeds, which I bought and I'm using. Kudos to them because the same sprouter I found on another website was $40, and it's $15 from them. So MyPatriotSupply.com.
Anybody can grow sprouts.
Anybody. You can live in a cardboard box and do sprouts. And they're so good for you. Get some feel-good things like Jell-O, hard candy, pudding, pudding doesn't turn out very well with instant milk, but it works okay with canned milk. If you want to get things like cake, muffin, or brownie mixes, a can of dehydrated whole eggs is a wise move. You can store eggs for over a year in the freezer. Beat a dozen eggs, pour them into an ice cube tray, and when they are frozen, put them in a Ziploc-type freezer bag. Just take out what you need, let it thaw, cover it in the refrigerator, fry it for scrambled eggs, or use it in a recipe. Christmas time popcorn tins work really well for 25 pounds of sugar or flour. They're rodent-proof if that's an issue for you. Don't forget coffee, tea, Tang, Kool-Aid, Country Time, lemonade. All good things to have around because I drink a lot of water, but sometimes you need flavor. And baking soda for cooking, but it can also be used for brushing teeth as an antacid, cleaning the bathroom, and 100 other things. Baking powder, yeast, brown sugar and shortening are all also some things you might want to have on hand if you like to bake from scratch. Salt. Do yourself a favor and buy it in the big bag. I think I have 2 25-pound sacks.
50 pounds.
Of salt.
Yep.
It'll last a decade without any fancy packaging as long as you keep it dry. With pre-made and fast food, we really don't realize how much salt we eat and need. It's cheap and the most basic seasoning in the world. Add extra cooking oil while you're at it in a pinch. It can be used as a substitute for butter or margarine in mac and cheese, etc. Whatever you do, don't forget to have jugs of water stashed in case your services are down. Editor's note, don't forget those frozen jugs in the freezer count in emergencies too. Variety is important, but if you find your pantry has some things you don't normally eat, commit yourself to eating one of those less favorite items once a week until it's gone. Or every couple of months, you can have an eat from the pantry week where you avoid the grocery store completely and eat only what you have on hand. Not going to the store for a week or two will really let you see what you need to stock up on or what you will potentially be doing without. Make a list during this week. This method works well for soap, toothpaste, and toilet paper, too. Once a pantry is stocked, you can replace what you use as it goes on sale whenever you shop for fresh vegetables and meat. Eating for a year from the pantry is easily doable. Okay, I really did like that article because I want to do a price comparison next week on, like, the long-term food storage. And some of that stuff is so expensive. The money I have spent on it is insane. I probably could have bought a car. So doing it this way really is the cheapest way. And my thing is this, you're going to eat it anyway. You're doing a rotation. You're just keeping more than you normally would. So I like the number 10 cans on it because they last 25 to 30 years. That was my whole deal in buying them. And plus, I do my own dehydration. We make our own jerky, you know. So, but if you don't have the money I spent, it's insane. If you don't have that kind of money, that is the best way to get your food storage started. It works really, really well. Anything you want to add?
I want
to say, yeah.
Joe. I was thinking while she was talking about food here about a good weapon for you. Go to Henry Repeating Arms and look at their mare's legs. Okay, this is it's an assault 45 caliber. Check this thing out. If you're looking at a lever action, it would be an assault lever action. So, but Henry Repeating Arms has them, and it's you can get them in 30-30 all the way up, and it's really nice weapon. So.
Nice weapon. I talk about food, you talk about weapons. That's okay.
All weapons.
All right. We have 5 minutes, so hold on. Give me a second. All right. Hold on. Okay. I'm not going to get through all this because I don't have enough time. These magazines I get are really cool because it's a lot of country people. Okay. There's this one of the readers from the magazine wrote this in, so I'm going to go through a couple of them. I don't have much time. She said, I've been meaning to write for some time, and now that the chores are all done, I'll have a few minutes to sit down and write. I'm a very busy 72-year young lady who loves the country life. You can have the big cities. Been there and done that one. It didn't work for me. But I've really found my piece of paradise. I can grow vegetables and fruit, can, freeze, dehydrate, have a few chickens, hogs, and the like, and be busier than a beaver from early morn till late at night. At the end of my day, I can't tell you half of what I've done, but I've been happy doing it. Readers have such good ideas on how to live on less and stretch the buck. I thought you might be interested in some of my tips and ideas. Once you get started in this type of lifestyle, there's no other way. Amen, girlfriend. So here we go with some of my crazy ideas. I'm going to go through a few of these. I reuse my Ziploc-style bags. Just wash them, hang them to dry, and reuse them. When I buy bananas, I take them apart, and they last longer. My mother would wrap the bananas in a tea towel and put them in the fridge, and they would last for a week. Open chunks of cheese will stay fresh much longer if wrapped in aluminum foil and refrigerated. Keep a chalk board eraser in your car glove compartment for use when your car windows fog up. Works better than cloth. Put small piles of cornmeal where you see ants. Ants eat the cornmeal but cannot digest it, and it kills them. No harm to pets or children. When I buy celery, I don't discard those green leafy tops. I chop them up and put them in my dehydrator. When they are dry, I crush them in my hand, mix in a little salt, and presto, you have delicious celery seasoning. Always keep your refrigerator clutter-free. Keep leftovers in as small a container as possible. This allows you space for other things. We don't need these huge refrigerators. We just need to be more organized. Use a fridge wisely. I let my clothes dryer hose blow inside the house in winter. I put a short lady's hosiery on the end to stop the lint from blowing into the house. It's a great source of heat. Ed note on that one. It's also a great source of humidity, which you may not want. Unplug all unused electronic appliances when not in use. They all use standby electricity. Only use electric lights in the room that's in use. Kids have a tendency to leave lights on everywhere. Make your own dried minced onion in your dehydrator. Cut up an onion into small pieces. Dehydrate, and it's done. It's cheaper and much better tasting than the store-bought stuff. She cuts up her used copy machine paper to use a scratch paper. Squeeze your toilet rolls from round to oval. You will find the roll will last longer. No more spinning the roll and wasting paper. Open the drapes, let the sun shine in your house in the winter. Free heat, close them when the sun goes down. She said, "This my shower head is in the bathtub, so I put the plug in, like let the water fill up, and soak my feet at the same time. I'm showering. I also let the hot water run over my hair, shampoo, and conditioner bottles. It helps them run out of the bottles easier." And she has been known to bathe her dog after she's done in the bathtub. I thought that was funny. All right, we've got a minute. I want to tell you, this is a listener-supported radio. Please go to libertytreeradio.4mg.com and hit the donate button. It costs them a lot of money for all this broadcasting, and we want to stay on the air. And we want Henry to stay on the air. We want Mark Kornke to stay on the air and Spike and Pastor Brooks. So please go and hit that donate button. And we will see you guys next week.
Real quick, I just went to it. It's henryrifles.com, Joe. It's a this thing is it's a 5-round capacity. It's 25 inches long. The barrel length is 12.9. And it comes in 357, 44 mag, and 45 Colt. It's like an Old West assault weapon. So,
good night, guys.
In the Mississippi River, she's a gold dry. The interest is up and the stock market down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown.